Hello and welcome to episode 6 of Our Dads Died, the podcast about death and dads specifically. I'm Rich Spaulding, I'm here with Tom Gherkin.
Yo!
This episode is probably, and we've said this a few times already, but we mean it this time, it's probably our favourite one.
Now this one's really weird and really different to what you've heard before. It constantly jumps between things which are really hard to listen to in terms of like blood and guts and gore, but then things that are really hard to listen to in terms of like really depressing topics. It is, and yet the whole way through, Rich keeps making me laugh.
Okay, I'm glad we came back to that because otherwise that was you describing how hard this episode is to listen to in two different ways.
Yeah, but it is though. It is hard to listen to. It's also really funny.
Yeah.
And I think that's the podcast.
Yeah,
I really think that's the podcast.
It was, for a bit of context, it's the second installment of our interviews with the death daddy, Victor Mortician Sweeney, our fantastic friend from over the seas. And in it, we get into some more sort of gruesome details. We also get into a loss that Victor experienced in his life, which is as Tom said, it's a difficult story to hear. It is very tough, and it's obviously affected him very deeply. But it's really interesting to talk to somebody for whom death is a daily occurrence about how he experiences death and how that's different or the same as the rest of us.
This is going to be a tricky one, I think, for some people. But I also think that if there was an episode I would say you should listen to, I would say it's this one.
Yeah.
Because I think what we start talking about and what we get into is a way of dealing with grief and dealing with death and all the things around it that is completely something that I think people might find helpful. So I really think this is the one to listen to. I really do.
Yeah. Having said that, a couple of trigger warnings, I reckon. There is discussion of suicide, so that's something that affects you. Maybe not the best episode to listen to. And then also, as with the previous Victor Sweeney episode, quite a lot of fairly graphic information about corpses. And if that's, again, something you're not in the right place to listen to right now, absolutely fine. We'll pop in the time code for the outro here.
47 minutes.
And then you can pick up where we leave off.
Brilliant. Here's Victor M. Sweeney. The M stands for murder.
I wondered what happened to all the innards, which, of course, you said get put into a big bag and then embalmed.
With an autopsy,
put back in, are they, at the end?
So there are two ways. This might interest you. There are two ways you can do it. You can either keep all the viscera, you cut it up, treat it, and keep it in the bag, and then that goes in the abdominal cavity if it's an autopsy.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the other method, which is called, this is great, it's called the lasagna method.
I already love it.
Yeah.
This is how the Italians do it.
Yeah. So, Mamma Mia. So instead of keeping everything in the bag, you take all the guts out after being treated with the chemical, and you put like a layer of viscera in the body cavity, and then you sprinkle it with embalming, like dehydrating powder. And then you put another layer, then you sprinkle it with embalming, dehydrating powder, and then another layer until you're done. And then you put the breastbone back in and you sew it back up, which is interesting. I've only done it a couple times. The reason you do that is because sometimes when the viscera is all displaced and then it's in this big bag, it distends. You know, when you finish, the abdomen could be like distended, and that just won't look natural. So like on a child, let's say, you wouldn't want to have like a big distended belly. So on a child, you'd want to use the lasagna method.
Well, of course,
we all know it.
Yeah, kind of pack everything in tight so it doesn't look unnatural.
So. That is disgusting and fascinating. And lasagna. When you first said it's called the lasagna method, I was like, why could it? And then as soon as you said you put it, I was like,
let's go with some more food things, because apparently that's a thing in the funeral world.
Right.
You also have, there's three types of what we call purge, okay? So purge is, there's anal purge, of course. You can imagine what that is.
Well, of course. I think I've seen that film.
Yeah. It was in a cup and there were two girls. With purge, there are two types. Three types. And so what we'd be talking about is any time when fluid is either coming out of the nose or the eyes or the mouth before someone's embalmed or after they're embalmed. So you have lung purge, which looks like frothed milk in like a coffee drink. Lung purge. And then you have stomach purge, which is like coffee grounds. And then you have brain purge, which is like a pale, sometimes like jelly, which, so those are the three types of purge.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wait, and so which one was anal purge again?
anal purge, is just on the other end. So it doesn't get the same kind of classification.
Got it.
You are listening to the hardest podcast to listen to ever, and we love it. You mentioned this thing. I mean, obviously, yeah, part of the job. It's part of the job. Children die. Get it. It's part of the job. Yeah. But I mean, with bodies like that, you know, that's got to be harder.
It's just the worst. It's just the worst. I'll never forget. It was some years ago, but there was a young boy in our community who was five, and he drowned, and I received him on Father's Day.
Oh,
so
God.
Father's Day night, I'm a new father. I don't know if my boy was just one or two, but I'm a new father and I'm taking care of this young boy. And I mean, it was just terrible. I mean, just terrible. Yeah. And then you do that and you just, you know, and then you get home and you lie awake all night. And then you meet with his parents the next day. And like, that's in some ways even worse.
Yeah.
But I don't know. You just do what you can. You know, I mean, you can only provide what you have. And I mean, you know, at least I'm doing something. And like with kids, for instance, we don't charge anything for kids. So whenever there's a child or an infant that dies, we just don't charge anything at all. So, you know, our services, totally free. Casket, free. Everything's free. We just don't charge anything.
And is that a standard across the industry, or is that something that just you guys do? Really?
Yeah, it's not standard, which kind of grinds my gears a little bit.
You've seen like GoFundMes for child funerals and stuff.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, you know, like nobody likes working for free. Nobody likes going backwards. But I mean, do you think your average 20 to 30 year old parent who loses a kid has any money to spend on this sort of stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't. Like, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, nope. Never will I ever charge anything for a child's funeral. Never.
Yeah. What a legend.
Good.
Well, there you are. So it's hard to listen to because you get the blood and guts. Then it's hard to listen to because it's emotionally devastating because we talk about dead children.
You get both.
Back to the blood and guts. Now,
okay, what do you got?
This thing about the bodies and how they distend and stuff sometimes, right?
Mm-hmm.
But are you always sewing them up to look like that even when no one's going to see them?
So not everybody, of course, is split down the middle, right? That's just for autopsies. So even if we have a body where the family's like, well, we're going to bury the body in a casket. We want it closed. We're not going to have any viewing.
Yeah.
I still always prepare everyone the exact same way I would. So, you know, for men, if they had their face shaved, I will shave their face. I will get them dressed. I will do their hair. Because there's always the off chance that someone is going to change their mind, right? Because it's not something you can get back.
Yeah.
Right? So if the widow, for instance, is like, actually, I want to see him. Like, you don't want to be sitting there, like, caught with your pants down, like, oh, well, sorry, I didn't get him ready, you know?
Yeah.
So I always do it. And, we had a situation some years ago, just off the top of my head, we had a suicide by a gunshot wound. And it was a fairly large gun. And so there wasn't anything left of this person's head, really. And like the parents obviously wanted to see their child.
Mm-hmm.
So, the deceased individual had been at home for like a week before they were found.
Oh, Jesus.
So things were really not great. Mm-hmm. But managed to embalm the person. And what we ended up doing is we just showed the arm. I just got the person dressed, had them in a body bag, sealed everything up, but had their arm out.
Mm.
You know? 'Cause like, at least you have that.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
But that, yeah. So to answer your question, yeah, I do that. Like, I mean, and like, you know, I was kind of getting gaggy and not feeling so great when I was putting a top on this person who had no, you know.
How are you putting a top on someone who hasn't got a head? I mean, without putting it in any other way. That's what it is, isn't it?
Yeah, it just is what it is. Yep.
Are you adding a tie?
No tie. Yeah, that'd be a tough one.
Harder.
Because I figure, like, you know what? Whatever the case, like, everybody deserves to be buried as nicely as they can, given the circumstance.
Yeah,
fair enough.
So you get them dressed, you do it. You know, you don't ever want to, like, open that bag up again, but mom and dad bring in clothes, you're getting them dressed.
Rich, it went really emotionally heavy again. I need to be grossed out.
Well, what I was going to ask is, after the many years you've been doing this, is there still stuff that will turn your stomach?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Like the missing things that should be there. That's not great.
Mm-hmm. horror directors say when they're making horror movies that the thing that's really disconcerting and really puts you off is when someone looks normal but has something just wrong, like a disfigurement, something missing, like the mouth being covered up, that kind of stuff. That's what's really unsettling. You must get a lot of that.
I can believe that. Yeah, I can believe that. Yeah. I don't know, things that turn my stomach. There aren't a lot. Like extreme decomposition. Like we're talking people who weren't found for a week in their unair-conditioned house. We had a person. I mean, and just the smell is so bad. And then, like, depending on the situation, you know, you get these gut bacteria that just run wild. And so, like, I've had cases where someone's been, you know, not found for a week or two, and like everything about them is distended, like fingers, plump sausages, face. Ooh. Like, I don't know if this is the right term, but like sometimes it's called monkey face. Cause like at a certain point, if like any human in the world, their face could be so distended, it's just like, and just everything is big. Eyes are bugging out, lips are bugging out, tongues lolling out. And like things are green and purple, and that's really gross.
Is that like in Willy Wonka where the girl eats the blueberry and she goes all blue? And,
yeah.
Is it like that?
It's like that. Yeah. And then like the juice, and then the juicing machine is in another room. Yeah. Sometimes it's you.
When you said the juice, I did think you were going to talk about some kind of, oh yeah, we call it.
Well,
the
I did.
Juice,
yeah. Right? I did have somebody split in half, and I had to get new shoes.
Oh. Good lord.
Yeah.
Wait. So
that's not great.
What was it that ended up? Was it? Are we talking blood, guts?
Just kind of whatever sort of
the lot.
Foul leftovers. Yeah, and it's just like split and or like we've had people who've passed away after like severe GI bleeds, and usually they're like on the toilet, but it's just like you walk in and it's just like blood everywhere.
Yeah.
And like it's happened a couple times where it's like you take the body back to the funeral home and the family's like, all right, well, I'm gonna go over to mom's house, and you're like, oh. So like my boss and I have like cleaned up several scenes of death just because, like,
really?
You know, well, like you don't, you know, like, you know these people, and like you don't want them walking in on that.
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, well, I'm, you know, just so you know, we're gonna go to the house first and just clean up a little bit, and like you're throwing away, you know, laundry and washing floors and doing that, like, and that's pretty rare. You don't have to do that all the time, but like, you know, you just don't want people to have to deal with that. Like, if anyone's gonna deal with it, like, just let me deal with it. I've already, you know, been there, done that kind of deal. my eyes are just ruined, so you know, what's one more?
But I've got a friend who is a doctor now, and when he was at medical school, he told me this story about when they were doing sort of, I think quite early on, they saw an autopsy, and one of the head lecturers took them through it. And it was an interesting one because he said there's obviously, you get very used to seeing dead bodies, as I'm sure you do, but there's such a level of respect in your industry for the body. Whereas he said this guy, he was in his 60s, he'd been doing it his whole career, he was over it. and he sort of cut this body open, was taking the organs out and going, well, that's the liver, puts that over there. This is the kidney, puts that over there. And I think it was when he got to the lungs, maybe, or maybe it was the liver. When he got to the liver, he'd run out of space for where to put these organs. And so he looked around for a second and then just slapped it on the guy's face and then carried on.
Oh. Yeah. So in school, they always tell you, you know, when you're preparing someone, obviously you have your horrific looking tools and such and all your various instruments. And they always tell you it's not a tool chest. Basically, like, you don't just like stack your stuff on someone as you're working on it.
Yeah, which feels like something you shouldn't need to be taught. And I imagine most doctors, you would think they wouldn't need to be taught it. But
it's different when it's a liver. I don't know. Maybe that's like exempt. I don't know. There's like a comedic effect you're going for. I don't know.
Well, I imagine it's about the size of a face. So it's the good. You get a good covering.
Is it about the size of a face?
I don't know what I'm talking about. We're asking.
It's probably bigger than a face.
Bigger than a face.
Depends how big the face is, of course.
It depends on how big your liver is. Like, how much do you drink? Like, do you want it to be bigger than your face or smaller? It's up to you.
Which would be the hardest organ to get to stay on a face? Because the smaller ones, you'd have to sort of put it in the eye socket, I guess, to try and...
Yeah, you would. Easy balance. Trying to think. It'd have to be something slippery. Like probably like your intestines. Like, good luck piling those up anywhere.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, just like a lot
slippery
of them.
Noodles. Big
I
slippery
just
noodles.
I just assumed that all organs were made the same when it comes down to slipperiness.
No.
I didn't think there was a hierarchy of slipperiness.
Back to the hierarchy, you guys. Yeah,
well, because this is what we talk about. Our grief, our dead dads, and how, like, kind of sad that is.
Yeah.
But, you know, also, like, in quite an aggressive way, we sort of argue to our guests always why our grief is worse than theirs.
Okay, tell me.
It's important that our guests know that. Because, you know, it's really sad when your dad dies.
As the daddy of death, you're the perfect person to let us know once and for all which of the two of us is higher in the hierarchy of grief based on our personal stories. And I want you to be brutal here, Victor. We'll tell you what happened in sort of bullet point form.
Yeah.
And I don't want any emotion. I don't want any. I just want pragmatism.
Okay.
Short, brutal thinking.
Supreme Court justice here we're talking.
All right. Mm-hmm.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Who wants to go first?
Well, we'll go chronologically. So my dad died when I was 24.
When you were younger.
I was significantly younger. I was 24 years old. I'd left home a couple of years before. I was living alone in a flat in Doncaster. It was the 23rd of December, 2014, 2 days before Christmas. I just bought my dad's Christmas gift and I was wrapping it. I got home from work that day and I got a phone call to say, your dad's dead. Or to quote my mum, daddy died,
that's even worse.
Which is worse, but I hadn't called him daddy for a long time. So it was also just confusing.
Yeah.
And it was, and I'll say this again, 23rd of December. And I then had to get a 4-hour journey home from Doncaster to my family home in the Midlands. And then we had Christmas Eve just a few hours later. And I had to unwrap the wallet that I bought for my father.
Did you?
And that he never got to receive.
I was going to ask if you gave him the gift.
I couldn't.
That's what I would have done. Put it in, like, wherever, like, in a casket, or if he's being cremated, like, put it with him. That's what I would have done.
Yeah, I did wonder.
Bet you regret that now, Rich.
I've actually still got the wallet. I can see it right now. So I kept it.
Do you use it?
I did for a while, but I didn't like how it looked in my jeans. It's quite chunky, so.
Dad wallet, I gotcha.
Yeah, but I've kept
it. Nothing wrong with that. Hey,
yeah.
All right.
That's my story. And I mean, I'm trying to think of it. Is there anything else really tragic that I can add in?
Yeah, I like the way you added the bit. You've never said that before, but you added the bit about lonely on your own unwrapping the present.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a nice bit of embellishment that.
And it was snowing when I went back to Doncaster for the first time, and I had to sleep alone in a flat that had no central heating, and I had to go and write radio jingles the next morning.
That juxtaposition is not good.
It's pretty sad, isn't it, Victor?
They're all in, like, the minor key.
Yeah.
No one's buying cars this month.
Yeah, there were some pretty messed up jingles that year. But yeah, Tom, you go. Top all that. Right.
I'm not going to be able to get the loneliness angle. It was something like the 14th of November, 2019. So chronologically speaking, it happened to me more recently. That is about a week before my 30th birthday. So, Rich, it was just a normal Christmas for him, any old Christmas. But for me, it was my 30th birthday that ruined. So
a milestone.
November goes into December, so I was still feeling it at Christmas. So it's sort of both.
you can't have that.
It was. He had cancer, which was
what kind of cancer?
All kinds of cancer. The old classic cancer where it starts out with, we're going to do a prostate exam. Oh, that's a bit weird. We'll have another person look at it. Another one. That's a bit weird. We'll have another person look at it. And the third person goes, we're going to have a little scan of your body. And then they go, it's in your prostate. It's in your everywhere. Hips. It's in your kidneys. It's in your lungs. It's going to your brain. You've got no symptoms. Well, unlucky. One of them. So properly, like, proper shock. And then he deteriorated for 2 years. Two very long years, Rich. They were so long.
2 long years you spent with your father.
Yeah,
awful.
Yeah, 2 long years of him getting slowly worse. it was bad at the end, you know. Like, throughout, obviously, it was lovely, you know, chance to spend time with him. But at the end, you know, Jesus Christ, watching someone, your last memory of someone being them in a hospital bed, you know.
Did he, like, lose a lot of weight, too?
Loads of weight, yeah. Well, I mean, but that was good for him because he was originally a really fat man. Yeah. So he actually looked, in a way, when he died, he actually looked sort of in the prime of his life.
Yeah. One of the rarely mentioned upsides of cancer, though, isn't it?
Great weight loss opportunity.
Always bald.
Why no
one
that? Like, they're not putting that on the brochure. What
he
the
was
hell?
Always bald, so as well.
Gotcha.
So there was that, but yeah, it sort of slowly got sick over a long period of time, and
to help you make your point, he looked okay, but he was really bad.
Oh, so bad.
Yeah, it's like it was just really jarring.
Right at the end, you know.
Yeah.
Presumably, you get this a lot, where you see someone when they're just about to die and they're just there, but they're not.
Yeah.
You know, and you can't shake that image, Rich. You can't shake that image. All right? So that does hang on. And then, you know, I went to see him, and then he got a phone call the next day saying he's died. And then on my birthday, everyone kept texting me saying, happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Your dad's dead, you know, kind of thing. So it's hard to forget. So I just think, and also the UK election was on and I had to work. You know, I couldn't get away from work. You're writing radio jingles. I'm going on 5 Live to talk about the election. You know, I mean, it's different, Rich. Oh,
that is different.
Yeah. You know,
I've got a brave face, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. No, in my experience, like working with a lot of families, there's really not a good way to go. Like, long and drawn out has its benefits, right? Like, you have time to spend. But yeah, like you say, you have this deterioration and it's like hard on everybody and it takes forever. And then, like, the quick way, you know, Rich is like also awful.
Worse, I would say.
Yeah, well, it's like that. Yeah, hey, wow. Well, we'll get to my reasoning here.
Sure.
Because that, there's something about that too that's hard because it's so dang quick. But also you don't, you know, you don't maybe have this long drawn out time where it's like you're slowly maybe desensitizing yourself to this loss. So, you know, you in some ways, like when it's long, you lose them over and over and over again. And maybe, you know, when it's short, you lose them once, but it's like the hard break. So I don't know. I always tell people, like, there's no good way. Can I tell you my death story?
Absolutely.
Please, okay. But be aware that I will rate it against my own.
Yeah, please. Yeah, we can do like a tier system. Or we could do like a secret ballot, maybe. I don't know if that would be fair.
Yeah, we all vote for ourselves. So.
Three-way tie.
Always happens.
So for me, I haven't lost my dad. He's living. But my my
weird
best
for you to come on this podcast to rub that in our face, though.
I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah. My dad is so alive, you guys.
Yeah,
it'd have been great if you just logged off then.
See ya. Got us.
No, so my So in 2018, my best friend took his own life.
Oh wow.
And so I was 28. He was 28 as well. And he had been my best friend from the time I was 14. So I'd known him for half my life. And I was born outside in a suburb of Detroit, Michigan, and moved to North Dakota when I was 13. And everybody's moody at 13, and I didn't really fit in, and everybody like hunted and fished and did all these things like a city boy doesn't know how to do. And I was like a pretty erudite kind of guy and not a whole lot of readers where I was at. So I didn't have any friends and was in a really low spot. And I met this guy, Alex, who we shared a love of the Blues Brothers initially. And then as all people should. And then we just spent like the next several years, like always with each other. Like people thought we were very gay. but in some ways, I'll say this though, we had like this very like intimate male friendship, and I don't know if that exists anymore, where it's like I have someone who I could like bear my soul to, and like I don't know, we're just very intimate, I guess. And anyway, he hit a rough patch, got really into drugs, we went our separate ways, we reconnected, he got married, his wife ran out on him, and then on November 5th, the day before my birthday, I get a call from his wife saying, hey, Alex hanged himself.
Jesus.
Wow. And I will forever be grateful. So that was November 5th of 2018. I'll forever be grateful because there was nobody in my office that day. And there was nothing to do and nobody died. My boss wasn't here. And I just like laid on my floor and cried for like 2 straight hours. And like I transferred the phone to the answering service so I wouldn't have to talk to anyone. I just like cried and cried and cried and cried. And then I had to like call my parents, and Alex like grew up in our house, and I had to like call my brothers, and he was like close with all my brothers. And so then I had to like call everyone and tell him. And then his parents then kind of came to me and they're like, hey, Victor, what do we do? Like, you do this, like, what do we do? And that was just excruciating, trying to figure out like, hey, how do we like coordinate this? And like, I'm glad I didn't have to be like hands on. But yeah, so like my birthday was the next day. I lovingly call it my cake down, because like my wife brought up my birthday cake. I'm just like openly weeping, trying to like enjoy my cake with my kids, and they're all like, "Dad, why are you crying?" I'm just like, just like ugly crying, trying to eat cake. And then we had his funeral on November 11th, and I gave the eulogy. I was one of the casket bearers. And we left the church to Strawberry Fields Forever, which was just like that's what he called like our childhood. He's like, yeah, like 2015 was Strawberry Fields. Like, we just lived in like this dream world, and like we didn't work, and we just like spent every waking moment with each other. So yeah, and then the worst part of it was he'd hanged like, and I had to of course talk to the medical examiner and the mortician, because they're like, his parents are like, well, they said we can't see him. Like, why? Like, well, let me find out. So I had to like sit there and listen to the exact details of my friend's hanging. And so he'd hanged himself and then hung there for 3 days. So all the blood had pooled in his head and then broken down. So you have what's called skin slip, and the eyes are bulging and distended. And so we couldn't even see him. And when you're used to doing that, So that was my death story. And then I also just had to like carry on at work and help other people with their deaths and just
So how does your job affect the way you deal with something like that? Do you feel like you know too much almost? Does it make it harder?
Yeah, I mean, nobody wants to sit there and listen to like post-mortem details of their best friend. And then have to like explain that to his parents in like a soft way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's hard. But it's, you know, like I guess like I got to experience it very firsthand. Like I got to like I wrote the first draft of Alex's obituary. And I, you know, got to hands-on do a lot of these things, which was really nice in its own weird way. So his birthday's in October and mine's in November, 1 month apart our birthdays are. And so the 3 years after that, I find like October to November is always just like my blue period. Like everything is just like sad and it sucks. And I'm just like sad all the time about it. And I find myself crying about it. And I'm like by myself. But that's okay. You know, it's okay. I don't know. It is what it is. And like, and you know, like my grandpa died in February and we saw him, my brother and I drove back to Michigan during COVID, 17 hours one way. So like Jesus. That should stagger you. 17 hours one way to see my grandpa the last time. And, you know, knowing that's the last time, I was just like bawling. And then like, I started thinking about Alex and I'm just like bawling fresh again. And I'm just like, my mom showed up there and she's like driving us back to my grandma's house. And I'm just like in the back, just a puddle. And like, I just don't care. Like if you're going to cry, you know, you should just do it. It's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah. So, which one of yours is worse? Higher.
Oh, you can't do that. You can't tell your significantly worse story and then suddenly go,
I'm afraid. No. The thing about it is that you expect your dad to die.
Yeah.
That's how it's meant to happen. If everything goes right with the world,
your dad
you experience your dad dying, because otherwise your dad's experiencing you dying, and no father should have to bury their son, right? So you should at some point expect your dad to die. It's just when it happens earlier than it should that it's really hard. I guess, you know, eventually at some point one friend will see their other friend die. It's just that's the kind of thing you think will happen when you're all 80 or 90 or something, or I guess in your case, 96, whatever you're going for.
Yeah.
But God, yeah. I mean, for it to happen when you were 28, did you say?
28. Yeah. Yeah. And then just to have to be like really involved is hard.
Yeah. Did you wish at that point, if you could have not been involved at all and just had the normal sort of experience?
Maybe. I like went through some serious depression. I had anxiety for a lot, like marking that day, I would get anxiety while driving at night. And that was like for about a year, like I was on Prozac and like hyperventilating while having to drive at night. So that was great. Wow. Really, really good for a job where you're working late in the evening.
Yeah.
So yeah, I initially had wanted to, I kind of wanted to volunteer to drive his body back from Wisconsin where he died back home. But that was one thing I just couldn't do. I just couldn't do it. And yeah, so sometimes I wish maybe I wasn't involved. But even being someone who's on the inside of that, even that, you know, funeral in a country Lutheran church for a guy who wasn't that religious, like it was good. It felt good to actually like memorialize something, you know?
Yeah.
Victor, that is a question that comes up on this podcast every single episode. Yeah. Who is the funeral for? Is it for the person who died, or is it for the person who was left behind?
It's about the one who died, and it's for everyone else. It's what it's got to be. I don't know, because I've been to funerals and I plan funerals where like we follow the person's instructions to a T, and it's all about them, and it's their favorite music and their way or the highway. And I just don't know if people are always served by that. You know? Like I had a cousin that got married, and she was really into like the Detroit like techno club scene. And she's like, at my wedding, we're only gonna have Detroit techno club music. And like they tried that for the first like 20 minutes, and it sucked. And nobody was dancing.
Sounds like it would.
Yeah, and so then they went back to like the oldies and, you know, Love Shack and, you know, all the old standbys, and everything was great. So I don't know. I think about that sometimes where it's like, you know, it can't always be for the person who died. It's got to be about them, but it's got to be for everyone else. It's got to serve everyone.
And do you think your cousin might try that again at her funeral?
I don't know. I'm kind of curious, actually. I should ask her about that. Like, have you planned your funeral? Yeah. I'm thinking Detroit techno.
It's not Detroit. A circumstance where you really need to worry about filling the dance floor, I suppose, is it?
No, no. Yeah, it's yeah, and like you can't RSVP. That's always fun. Yeah. So like you don't know if like at a funeral like 50 people are gonna show up or 500. Sometimes you're surprised and like oh I did not. We don't have enough food for everyone. So I think it's interesting.
After Alex's death, has that affected your sort of your work, your day to day, the way that you experience your work? Has it changed the way you think of death?
Yeah, I think so. Well, I was telling you guys about the gentleman that took or the person that took their life, and we had like the arm, right?
Yeah.
And all throughout that, I'm thinking like, man, I would have loved to have seen Alex's arm. Or like held his hand one more time, you know, like shook his hand. Like I would have loved to have shaken his hand. And like, I can tell you what his hand feels like. Or like I had a dream like 2 months after his death where he gave me a hug and it felt like his hug. Have you ever had that? Have you had that with your dads?
Yeah.
Where it's like, man, you wake up and you're like, I just want to go back to sleep. Like that was just so real.
We've got a whole episode about dreams because it varies so wildly. But do you experience it often?
Not as often as I'd like.
What an answer!
Like when it happens, it's really nice. And like I've like woken up like with tears in my eyes several times. Like has that ever happened to you? Like you wake up crying or like you wake up laughing? That's like a fun one.
Yeah.
But I only ever have that like really intense, like emotional awakening, like when it's about Alex. I don't know why that is.
Yeah. But
he was, you would have liked him, you guys. He did stand up for a little bit, but he was primarily an improv comic. He was at the IO or he was at the IO theater in Chicago, which is where like Chris Farley got his start.
Oh yeah.
And Belushi and all those guys.
It's a very famous theater, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So like he would have been like, you guys would have got along well. Yeah, it was hard to see him like cut himself down like in what could have been his prime.
Yeah. You know? That's such a sad but also not uncommon story of young men.
Nope.
Which is, I mean, it's the case here, it's the case in the States, it's the case all over the world. But when it's, and you know, you hear stories and you hear these statistics, but when it's your friend and it's Alex and he was a funny guy and he had these dreams and this life and it's brutal.
Yeah. When his parents put out his gravestone, it was, I thought it was kind of, I hate to say this, it was like, it was lacking, you know, like some people are just larger than life.
Yeah.
And you're like, this like gravestone should be 10 feet tall. Like it should just be freaking huge. And it's just like a little cemetery marker. So I have a friend who's a headstone engraver who does some work for us at the funeral home, and he made me a little piece of granite in the same color as Alex's headstone, and it had a pair of Ray-Ban sunglasses, and it said, "On a mission from God."
Nice.
So I went out there and amazing. I dug that down and put it next to his headstone. Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
That's really nice.
And it's good that, as well that you've, I mean, most people couldn't do that, but you've got friends in the business.
Right.
You have the connections, that's true.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If anyone's going to be able to hook you up with a headstone engraver,
that's right.
It's Victor Sweeney.
Well, I actually design headstones as part of my like side gigs. So I like design and sell headstones.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Tell us more about that.
That's kind of neat. It's just something we do on the side. So being a small town, we have to kind of be everything to everybody.
Yeah.
So we're more or less a one-stop shop. So I set up funeral trusts and do pre-planning. We do funerals, of course. I embalm. And then I also sell headstones. So that's one thing that's been kind of fun because it's something you can create, you know, and it's maybe perpetual is too strong of a word, but it's something that's going to be up for a very, very long time and withstand the elements. And so that's been kind of fun because you get to make something that's I don't know, people have their thoughts and you work with families, but you also get to put your own spin on it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so that's been interesting. I should put a plug in. There's a headstone engraver in the UK who's given me a lot of inspiration.
Okay.
Go ahead.
There's a company called Stone Letters. And
right.
they do, they're like an artisan headstone maker. So they like carve all lettering by hand, and they do a much like much more detailed job than my monument company does. But it's been kind of fun to look through how other countries do their headstones and incorporate that into your design, because it, like over here, you guys, I wish I had an example. It's like you have a 3 foot wide headstone, husband, wife, husband side will have a hammer and a square because he liked to build stuff. And the wife side will have a sewing machine because she liked to sew, or, you know, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've just last couple of years, I've been like, I'm not doing that anymore. I want to make things that, you know, in 100 years, they'll still look good. They won't look kitschy, I guess. Mm. Or like, you don't want, like, I don't, like, what are your dad, like, do your dads have gravestones?
Cremated, mine.
Okay. But like, but they're not in a cemetery then.
No, still, actually.
Where's your dad?
Still at my stepmom's house by the fireplace.
Okay.
By the fireplace, in an urn, not in the fireplace.
we haven't cleaned out the fireplace since. Hardly ever use it.
That'll do. We just put him in the chimney, set it on, just let it go. An urn which has a big Liverpool fan. As I said, I wore a Liverpool shirt to his funeral. So the urn has Liverpool Football Club kind of on it. And it's just there, and we don't really know what to do. I guess waiting till COVID comes to an end to do something with it, but it's been there for so long now, it's starting to become a bit part of the furniture.
Yeah, it's hard.
Dad's in the room kind of business.
Yeah, well, and, you know, I guess, like if you do nothing, like, what happens? Do you, like, inherit it eventually? You know, is it, like, something you just pass on down to your kids?
Is it wrong to... Do you have to keep the ashes all together?
Or, no, you don't.
But it almost feels weirder to be like, well, you've got part of Dad in this urn, and you've got part of him in this urn, and we've just divvied him up between the urns.
I'm not a big fan of that. I mean, just for myself personally, I really prefer cremated remains. That's like industry speak. Cremated remains.
Ah, yes.
Keep those intact and bury them or entomb them or have them in a place that is neutral.
You fan of the scattering of the ashes?
Yeah, I'm not big on that. I mean, I think it just, you know, there's something, every human life is special and every human life matters.
Mm.
And I think there's something about being able to say, my great grandpa is buried right here. Like, I can stand where my great grandpa is buried.
Mm. Mm.
And I don't know, like, if you scatter your dad in the ocean, like, you know, or in the river, you know, like they say, no one steps into the same river twice. Like, where's dad?
Yeah. You can't really rethink that, can you, later on?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm not big on scattering or divvying or like cremation jewelry. That's a big thing. I was gonna sell some of that. But I'm not a big fan of it. I just don't. That's just not my thing, I guess.
Yeah, that's fair. And
what about you, Richard?
Well, my dad, he is buried. He's in a graveyard not far from where we lived, but just down the road from where he worked. He was a GP in a small village in the Midlands.
What is a GP?
General practitioner. So just a doctor.
Okay, that's I would have guessed.
Yeah.
But okay, that's cool. All right. Does he have a gravestone?
He does. Yes. And I have an odd relationship with it because I'm not a hugely religious person, and neither was he.
Sure.
But he is buried in a church, and he had a Christian funeral.
Yeah, okay.
And so it's an odd thing. I'll go there, and sometimes I'll feel very connected to him, and other times it just feels like you're standing in a cold field and looking at a bit of rock.
I can see that.
What does it say?
What does it say?
It says his name and his date of birth and his date of death. And then I think it says, beloved father, husband, friend, son, doctor of this parish. And then there's a quote from Winnie the Pooh.
Nice.
It says, some people care too much. I think it's called love, which is very nice.
I like that.
Yeah.
What's it made out of? What's his gravestone made out of? Do you know?
Yeah, this is good. Come on. Oh, materials.
It's a good question. Yeah. It's...
What color is it?
Gray. Light gray, I'd say.
So it could be like granite or maybe a type of sandstone, possibly?
Granite sounds like it rings a bell.
Okay. Is it polished?
Yes.
I'm just curious. Okay. Yeah. So it's probably granite. Yeah, granite polish is the best. That's interesting. I someday I hope to never have to use it, but I read this on that Stone Letters. They have a whole series of like epitaphs, which are really beautiful. And I've been trying to use epitaphs more because they're not really used here, or like quotes, which I think is really cool. I've been trying to use it more. Well, there's one that I read that just touched me, and I thought, if I ever have a child die, like either in my community or maybe one of my own, God forbid. It says this, and it just broke my heart when I read it. It says, God's garden has need of small flowers.
Oh, that is nice.
Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that nice? Just gut wrenching. I don't know.
Yeah.
It just kind of hurts a little bit.
I think we've taken up so much of your time.
I think we're wrapping up, yeah.
But one final question. If there were to be a zombie apocalypse,
yes.
Do you think they would remember you and take care of you as one of their own?
Yeah, I hope so. At least in my living experience, you know, you deal with a wide swath of people from very low means to very high means. And if you can make friends with like the very rough people, like you're in, you know, like you can go to a bar if there's a fight, like they got the morticians back. So I don't know why like zombies would be any different.
Well, I imagine a lot of them, you'd bury them. Their last memory will be this kind man looking after them.
Or it'll be like this kind man, like puncturing all their organs with a big spear.
That's the balance, isn't it?
That's the possibility. That's the
problem.
In fact, they'll come for you first.
You'll be the main target of a lot of dead people.
Well, and I only live like 2 blocks from my city cemetery, so I'm in trouble. Yeah. My house is not that fortifiable.
And you're probably there more than most at the cemetery, so if it all kicks off, you're the guy who's going to
kill this guy for sure. I recognize his walk.
Oh, yeah. God. Yeah. There we go. Victor M. Sweeney, edition the second. A couple of important points raised. Tom, where's your dad?
2 years on from
2 years later, where does he reside?
2 years on from the episode, I guess. Yeah. It's interesting. So it's illegal in the United Kingdom for you to scatter somebody's ashes on private property.
Is it? I mean, that makes sense, I suppose.
Yeah. Like, without the landowner's permission, it's illegal to scatter his ashes on private property without the landowner's permission. Yeah.
So, where have you scattered him?
Well, I mean, I would say that his urn is almost as full as it once was in the living room. It's in the living room, Liverpool on it, and it's almost as full as it once was.
Okay. And why is it not as full as it once was?
And it's illegal in the United Kingdom to scatter somebody's ashes on private property.
So those two facts you're presenting, completely unrelated.
Those are just two facts. Right. You know, those are just two facts.
Right.
But it really is illegal in the United Kingdom to scatter it on public property. So if he had a favourite place, it would be totally
illegal.
It would be illegal to scatter it there.
So what you're saying is, next time you go to a Harry Ramsden's, do make sure that is pepper. Because you never know. I mean, think it is illegal to scatter ashes on private property, as you've made very clear.
Yeah, without the landowner's permission.
Without the landowner's permission. But as we discussed on a previous episode about your dad's favourite place, had my dad been cremated, it would have looked really quite... be quite an odd image, wouldn't it, seeing someone just chuck some ashes in a tip?
I guess it wouldn't be illegal, though, because you're just discarding
them. No laws against it. I just think it would make me look very callous.
Oh, God, is it illegal to scatter your dad's ashes at a tip?
Sure. Well,
because it's a private it's a privately owned, but...
Yeah.
Oh, I'm throwing them away, Governor. I'm throwing them away. I'm just throwing these away. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. That's how I would say it as well, to disguise my identity.
That's how you talk as well, to be fair. Yeah. That's my impression.
Yeah, I think it's probably okay to scatter some ashes in a tip. Not a body.
Not a body.
Probably can't leave a body there. You do, and the police say that if you've got a body, do burn it before you put it in the tip. They make that very clear.
Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. So, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. If you loved it,
and I loved it. So if you loved it, that's amazing. Rich,
yes,
there's something very important that we need people to do.
Yes. Listen, we're going to keep banging on about it. It will never stop. It will never end until every single person, when we've got more than 8 billion reviews on Apple Podcasts, then maybe we'll stop mentioning
again.
It for
go
a bit.
Go round again at that point. Then we have a second reviews from people.
Yeah.
Then we start getting more than one. That's what we want.
Yeah. When we've got 16 billion reviews, two from each of you, maybe then we'll let it rest. But until then, please do rate, review, subscribe, download, follow. Is that everything? Like? Thumbs up?
Yes, please. Do absolutely everything that can help this podcast grow. But I think the number one thing I'd actually like you to do this week, dear listener, tell a friend.
Oh, yeah, tell a friend.
Tell a friend. Just one. If everyone who listened told a friend, we would have double... Well, and they listened.
Yeah.
We would have like 1,000 listeners. I mean, it's crazy. We've had so many... such a brilliant response to this, and thank you so much. We're approaching 1,000 listens, Rich.
Yeah.
Which is just crazy.
And the thing is, if you do know someone who is... And a lot of us will... know someone who is going through grief in one way or another at the moment, and you think this podcast might be helpful for them, pass it on.
Please
spread the gift, which seems like an arrogant thing
spread
for me to say.
Spread the gift. Hashtag spread the gift.
That's the message for this
podcasting.
Week. Hashtag spread the gift.
Spread the G. Lads.
S that G.
Thank you so much for listening. And next week, we've got another Barnstormer for you where me and Rich will be talking about our dad's final. Parting words. What will they be? Cliffhanger.
I think last words was our last words to our fathers.
Oh. Well, I think it's both.
Yeah, it probably is both, to be fair.
See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.